Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
That was awesome.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register and I play Laura on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Survivors, welcome to episode 69 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Brian, sort of.
And I'm ALT.
Hey! Changing a little things up a little bit, aren't we? Well, we will be covering Fear the Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 2, Welcome to the Club. But before we get started, we have additional feedback for Fear the Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 1, The End is the Beginning. And the it comes from Aaron from the internet, and it was from a blog post to our for the last blog. And she goes on and says, "But oh well, at least Morgan is still alive. Meh, I'm not impressed by that." And that was a response to me. I was like, "Oh well, okay, I get it." But on to the podcast. It's called "Why Are We Watching This?" Ha. Huh. He doesn't know, but LT just described my feelings about this episode and show now. I still love Alicia and Strand, but man, this show is not the same from when it started. Hashtag bring back Madison. I agree with LT. The bounty hunter was awesome. It's a shame they killed him in this episode. Fear is back, Kyle. I didn't see Alicia Strand or Daniel in this episode. You guys know I can't stand Morgan Jones, so the bitterness shouldn't be surprising. Yes.
That bitterness runs deep.
You could have done a whole half a season with the bounty hunter, I feel. Again, it's such a shame they killed him off in the first episode. He easily could have been the sub-boss for the season. Then they focus back on Virginia as a season bad. Morgan Jones on Fear the Walking Dead is a giant Mary Sue, a prime example of one to be extracted. Ugh, the fact that he's still alive is just so ridiculous. LT basically described why I'm feeling this episode is overall a waste of time for me.
You know, it's funny that she mentions Mary Sue because we got into a discussion on this week's Star Trek Discovery podcast about Mary Sue's and how a lot of people think that Michael Burnham is a Mary Sue. And that was a term that Ruthie wasn't really familiar with. So I kind of gave like the textbook definition of it. And, you know, for those of you that don't know what it is, it's basically this character that can do everything and is good and people love them. And, you know, they're like vaulted to this, you know, upper echelon level just because for no reason, but they can basically do no wrong. And, it got started from, an old, like, Star Trek fan script where they had Lieutenant Mary Sue that saved the ship and, you know, was only 15 years old, but the youngest lieutenant in Starfleet. Anyway, this is really dumb story, but it was intended to be dumb, but it became a trope. So anyway, so like she's saying, like, Morgan is a Mary Sue.
Well, he's a Marty Stew.
Yeah, he's a Marty Stew. Yeah. But it's funny. Well, we had that very same conversation this week.
Yes, you did.
Yep.
Well, all right. Well, to continue on, she quotes, "I'm kind of glad he was only in one episode," which was me. She's like, "Take that back, Kyle. The bounty hunter was awesome."
I agree.
I know. And after, you know, thinking about it, and after, like, when I was editing the episode, I was kind of like, well, okay. Yes, I think there was more there that, you know, we could have explored. So I agree with you with that one. So I will take it back. And then she goes on, LOL to Kyle's truck rant. I loved it. I also love the rant by you all about the log. Huh. Here's the weak sauce. The guy just met Morgan and he's naming his kid after him. Seriously? I roll to the Mary Sue-ness of him. Yeah, I kind of agree too.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we must get back to that whole truck/log.
We spent like
I listened to that us talk about that. It was just, I don't know, it was so classic.
They treat him as such a golden child in the series, and I hate it. Fear was about the Clarks, and Morgan is not a Clark. I thought they said in season 5, season 6, was it the for Fear because of the ratings?
I think there was speculation about it, but there's never been anything
hard
said.
But
yeah, but it's worth saying that the ratings are down across the board, practically on every single show that you can look at, like even football. So, when you look at the ratings with respect to everything else, Fear compared to other shows on the network is actually doing pretty well. It's not doing as well as its parent show, The Walking Dead, but The Walking Dead is also not doing anything like what it used to do. Like it's, you know, it back in the day, it used to get ratings in the sevens consistently, even like 8 or I think even 9s on the 18 to 49. And now it's in sub 1 in the 18 to 49. So it's getting, you know, this week, well, we'll get into that, but it's, we already recorded that part of it, but it got a 0.44. Compared to other things on cable, that's not bad. And if you even look at things on broadcast network TV these days, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. Like it won't, you know, win any ratings for the week, but it's also, it's doing okay. So,
I think the metrics have changed so much.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I don't know, like that needs to kind of change, and whether or not it's like the ratings that you're like looking at, it's like, okay, if when it's broadcast, it's so much of change. It's kind of like, well, yeah, it might seem low, but that's actually probably pretty high for the way people are.
There are several shows on Sci-Fi I know of now that are way lower than that.
Yes. So very true. And you know, like when I'm looking at, I'm just looking at it here on the, on Sunday night, and I'm looking at the final ratings for, network TV, not cable, but I mean, the only thing that is getting a decent, rating is Fox and NFL Sunday. And that is on in the afternoon. So like, it's not, we're not even talking about like, you know, nighttime. And when I look at the Sunday night football ratings, it is a 3.7. That's nothing like it used to be. Like that's about half of what it used to be. And when I look at Fear, that 0.44 that I just talked about, was third on cable that Sunday. So it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Now what it's behind, stupid 90 Day Fiance, that, you know, that just goes out. That just, you know, shake my head, you know, it's still, it's doing quite well compared to the things that it competes against.
Yep. Well, that's, I mean, you got to take all that stuff into account. So,
yes.
All right. She continues. If they're going to bring over more The Walking Dead people, make it someone I might like Michonne. That would be interesting to see Michonne on.
Yeah. People. Not going to happen now.
No.
I
don't think they want to lose Alicia Denham Carey. I thought about Kim Dickens too, Brian. She's an amazing actress as well, and Madison is such an interesting character, but they stupidly took the series from her and the family vibe to give Morgan something to do so.
And I've said this before, so I'm not going to do the long version of this, but I still think they did a focus group on Madison, because some people loved Madison, and some people hated Madison. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, sharp negative that some people had, you know, like when she's doing things like turning on the hotel lights, that's an example, but, you know, she had a negative, a sharply negative impression on some people. And I think that may have, you know, if I'm cynical about it, I think that may have had something to do with it. I don't know, but I also think that it was a dumb decision to kill her off, because I think the show would be much stronger with her still here. Like, even if they killed off Nick, if Madison was still here with John Dory, with Morgan, with, you know, June and Dwight and Althea, I think it would have been a better show.
Yeah. And she, you know, regardless of whether, it's like, was she likable or did she become likable later, this and that, she was an anchor in the plot department. So it was kind of like, regardless, she was that one anchor. And it was like,
right,
that got taken away, and then they kind of just started doing other stuff and like whatever. And Alicia, kind of, I would debate that, like, she's kind of bringing up that role, but, you know, anyway, we'll go.
I would say.
And then she goes on, it would be a better show with Madison, Kyle. All right. I agree. I've never said I wouldn't be. one word, LT, on the escape plan for the water tower hideout. Zip line. I wonder if under is going to be a theme this season. You have a town hidden under a lake and the submarine which goes under the water. Well played on the Dakota joke, Kyle. I'll be honest, I skipped the rest of the podcast episode once you got to The World Beyond, because I'm not watching that one. I enjoyed the fear discussion stuff, though, and I look forward to that debate again next week.
Do not feel bad about skipping The World Beyond section.
But it's funny.
I just couldn't do it.
we're charming.
Okay, well, yes, the funny part of the podcast, yes, but the episode, the show is, well, yeah, I don't know.
But we're so good at it.
Yes. True.
All right. Well, thank you, Aaron. All right. Well, next, LT.
All right. We've got some feedback from Gary from the internet. He says, hi, I don't know if any of the Walking Dead writers, producers listen to your podcast, but if they do, here's an idea to consider if Rick returns on the final season of Walking Dead. How super neat would it be for the episode where Rick is able to rejoin the group, that the initial encounter is somewhere where Rick is alone and overwhelmed by walkers, and then here comes Judith wearing Rick's sheriff's hat and yielding a sword that helps Rick to escape that situation. Can you imagine the look on Rick's face when he realizes who it is that just helped him escape from the walkers? Just an idea from Gary.
Yeah, and I probably should have pressed this. Like, oh, yeah, so this was kind of more of over, obviously, The Walking Dead and not Fear. Yep.
Right.
You know, it was good. You know, it's definitely be interesting. He's not going to come back to the show. They want the movies. He's already kind of pretty much into that. But again, it hasn't been filmed. They could.
But we don't know.
He won't come back because there's no Carl.
Carl.
Yeah. So our last bit of feedback for, it's not even for last week, but I guess it kind of is. It's from Clint from Indianapolis. He says, I'm still behind on my TV watching and podcast listening, but I am currently listening to last week's podcast. And I must say the combo of Brian, Kyle, and LT is great. Having LT's new perspective is a great addition, and he is bringing new aspects to Brian and Kyle's comments and reviews. I can't wait for the second episode of the season. Keep up the great work, guys. Thumbs up.
Aww.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Brian's presence is starting to minimize, because that's why I said sort of, because I'm not going to stay for the whole episode this week. So because when it comes to World Beyond, I am world not present. AMC, the app, both on my iPad and on my phone, decided I was not going to watch World Beyond. So like, it literally more than once, the apps stopped and crashed and gave me errors saying, you know, you can't watch this. And it's like, after five times between my iPad and my phone of getting a crash, I'm like, the hell with this. So I didn't watch it, but anyway, I didn't get to do a detailed watch of Even Fear. I did see the whole thing through once, but I've got, you know, other stuff that I need to deal with. So I'm not going to stay for the whole episode tonight, but I'm here for some of it. So,
well, Kyle and I will try to stay amused and go through all of it.
Yep. We'll take care of it. It's no good.
Yep.
You'll be back. I know.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go on to the current episode. We'll be covering Fear the Walking Dead season 6, episode 2, titled Welcome to the Club. And later on, we'll also cover The Walking Dead World Beyond season 1, episode 3, titled The Tiger and the Lamb, but in a limited capacity. So, Fear the Walking Dead season 6, episode 2 was called or titled Welcome to the Club. It was written by Naseem Chowdhury. Directed by Lenny James, none other than Morgan. The description was: Virginia's forces Leisha and Strand to clear an unusual walker threat, where an encounter with the new ally gives Strand an idea that could be the key to their freedom. All right, well, let's go into our ratings. LT, what did you give this episode?
Well, I'm giving this one an 8.5 out of 10. You're a hero now, Sanjay.
Well, it took them the whole episode.
Best part of the episode. Well, okay, second best part of the episode.
Well, I gave it an 8.6. Keep stabbing. Don't stop to talk, Alicia. I couldn't handle that. They spent way too much time talking when they could be just stabbing walkers.
Yeah. I gave this an 8.5. False faded memories. And of course, when I say that, I'm thinking of the best part of the episode, the last 30 seconds of it. Daniel's faking.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I kept waiting. It's like, I kept waiting and waiting. He's got to be faking. He's got to be faking. And then finally, when he reacts to Morgan, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. I didn't doubt it, but yeah, it was kind of like they left it to the end. So
they certainly did.
Yep. All right. Well, that was our rating. So let's go on to our listeners' ratings. LT.
All right. Glennis from Toronto says 8 out of 10. Get them molasses walking walkers moving. Rawhide.
Deanna from Detroit, she's like, I rate this episode 8 out of 10, Daniel the Great Pretender.
Renee from Atlanta says 8 out of 10, Daniel Salazar has amnesia. I guess it's shocked emoji. No, he doesn't. Fool ya.
Yep.
I'll do the last one here. Aaron from the internet says, this was just really such a great episode that I would easily rate it an 8.5 out of 10, if not a 9. I can never go 10 with this series because unless Madison shows back up. But even with that forced Morgan appearance, seriously, writers, we don't need him in everything. At the end, this was still a great episode because of the Alicia and Strand content. Well, he did direct it, so... You know,
yeah, he kind of had to put himself in there, you think?
I don't know. I liked him being there because it was kind of for him to be the one that sees Daniel, you know, truly being faking it. I think it worked. Like, it would have had to have been someone, you know, like a John Dory or June or some, like someone who was not in the rest of the episode for it to work.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say that it took somebody who's not in the settlement.
Right.
Because that way he's got ultimate plausible deniability.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. All right. Well, let's go into our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce.
All right. So our first listener's awesome sauce. You want to take that, LT?
I got it. Dieta from Detroit says the molasses-covered walker sticking to everything and everybody. I thought the first scene when they opened the door with the first red shirts, they all just kept slipping and falling till no one was left except the scared guy who stood back and watched everybody get eaten. That was hilarious to me. Laughing emoji, laughing emoji, laughing emoji. Especially when the ranger fell and got dragged in.
Yep. Can't argue with that. Glennis from Toronto, she says, Strand, the walker rustling, hurting the walkers and giving the walkers the head injection stab. Daniel, Ruse pretending to not remember anyone. By doing that, he protected them and being a very dangerous undercover agent. If he revealed he recalled all of them, they also would be separated again by Virginia.
Renee from Atlanta says, Daniel tricked the ultimate trickster Strand. How could anyone possibly not think Daniel was acting? I mean, he was a soldier that became an assassin, so he knows how to play his enemies. Daniel and Morgan is like Rick and Daryl, the ultimate duo. Virginia is about to get her behind kicked.
Yep. Aaron from the internet, awesome sauces, everything Alicia and Strand, because how could you not enjoy their content? We may not have the family fully like we used to, but we still have this unit and there's so much between them and the acting is so good that they glue you to the screen. This episode was half off by the time I felt we were just getting started on the whole, it had me wanting more because it had felt like forever since we've had this good content. Also, we had the return with them debates amongst characters for some organic drama instead of blindly following some dude they just met. Yeah, I think, a lot of the comments are coming. It's like, oh, yeah, Daniel, because that was kind of the obvious, he was like, hey, you have amnesia. It's like, whatever. And just some of the, everybody's kind of reaching out and be like, hey, Daniel. But really this episode evolved around Alicia and Strand. And it was, that made this episode. It was just,
yeah.
I have a feeling this is what they're doing is like, we're going to kind of get these little, I'm sure we're going to get the, John and June episode. We're going to get these individual episodes. I'm wondering towards the end, once the group starts coming back together, we won't get these just like bottle episodes of just like, oh, we're only going to focus on these characters. Oh, we're going to focus on these characters this week. And then Morgan's.
Which is kind of funny because, this kind of format seems to be built for COVID.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. It's just like so far, just. This episode definitely was, we'll go on. Let's go to our awesome sauce.
All right. Well, for me, Daniel Salazar is still my hero. I mean, he's always been the character that I've really liked the most. I mean, he's the one that I thought was probably the best one from the very beginning. And just seeing him doing his thing, playing everybody, it was just awesome. I mean, I just absolutely thought that was the one of the better parts of this episode. I really like the end game on the molasses plant that we all thought, oh, there's going to be some weapon inside or there's some treasure inside or there's something really cool inside. But instead, it was, Jenny kind of pulling that next level move of, well, we'll give these people this puzzle and we'll see who sorts it out. And that's the kind of person I want to have in a position of leadership. So that was really kind of cagey on her part. And I really like the fact that they wrote it that way because it added a level of, it added a dimension to her character that we hadn't really seen before. So, kudos to the writing staff for that one. I really enjoyed the way that they used that cattle ramp to clear the building. good use of resources on hand. It showed a level of strategy and thinking for Strand to have pulled that thing out, because it's something I'd talked about before. I know I'd left comments back on the main show about channeled fields of approach, that way they could contain the walkers in a confined area and take care of them as they could. Granted, we know stuff happened because drama happens, but I thought that was really cagey. However, I'm not letting them off the hook. There is a hot sauce attached to that we'll get to later. And I'll just say it again, that Daniel is the king of playing possum. I know we just talked about it, but like I was saying, Morgan was the only person that Daniel could have come out of that for, because everybody else is compromised. Everybody else, this way, they could, torture them, and they're not going to say, well, hey, Salazar's cracked. Salazar's, off in his head.
Yeah.
That this way he's perfectly insulated from anything internally that Jenny's crew can pull.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. He pulled the wool over her eyes, and just now is like, and that's the thing. We all like, yeah, I think we knew that. It's like, that's who Daniel is. It's just like,
because we've seen it. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen how he did it.
He's a survivor. I mean, that's what he is best, known for. He will survive. He's almost like a cockroach, he'll survive, nuclear winter, whatever harsh environment. He has a way to succeed, and his way to succeed is to, play dumb. And he does it so effectively that he fools everyone, even people that are close to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he did it at the dam at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
When he was like, playing the head bowed, cowed janitor. And then when they figured out who he was, then you see, badass, kick ass Daniel just like turning a switch. So,
Totally. All right. Well, thank you, LT. I will go on to mine. I have to agree, the cold open to me was pretty amazing. It's like, I like the goo flowing out when they open the door, and it's like the one by one body snatching of the walkers' prey, the end of the blood oozing out at the end of the door. I felt like I can't say that I've seen kind of a more creepy, like thrilling opening in this show or even The Walking Dead in a very long time. It was a very nice setup, and it was very cool, and I thought it was shot well. It was just, I don't know. I have to agree with everyone. It's like, that was like a very great cold open. Strand going back to his old ways, and I kind of have a little more to say about this later between him and Alicia, but I just, it's Strand is Strand, which is kind of just like, we've had to wait this long for the show to come back on, but it was just like, this episode, just the interaction between Strand and Alicia, this episode was so good and so enjoyable because of that. So I put that in my awesome sauce. And then, of course, everybody's kind of agreeing that Daniel's fake out. And it was like, we all knew that he was playing, because that's like just being able to watch everybody's reaction to him. And then it was like the not surprising end. Like, we know this is Daniel. So it's like, if they didn't do this, then there would be like, okay, this is going to be like the weak sauce. Like, ratings would have been one. you cannot play that character that way. That's just that would be not Daniel. But I love the fact, because it's just like him, meeting up with Morgan, and we kind of see it, and it's just, Jenny, girl, you made a horrible mistake. Daniel is not going to let up. He's You know, it's kind of, I was like, I really hope that we see him torture and flay the skin off Jenny like we did that soldier in like season one. Like, I kind of like, I'm looking like, oh, there's going to be this dark scene where Jenny's walking around the corner. Daniel grabs her. She disappears. He's like, where's Jenny? And then he's like in some basement, just all like sharpening his knife going, what did you do to my people?
No, what did you do to my cat?
Oh yeah. Why? Like, screw the people. Where's my cat?
What did you do with Skidmark?
Still don't know how he got that name, Skidmark. Do we? I don't think so.
The only thing I heard is they wanted to name him like Shithead.
Oh yeah.
And they said, we can't do that.
He just went with Skidmark. Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't anything in the episode wise. He called him Skidmark, or called the cat Skidmark. So,
well, I mean, most of what I thought of, I think, has already been said. Definitely, kudos on. So Lenny James, for his directorial debut, I think did a great job. We saw some things like molasses. Sticky walkers, that was new. And that cold open was just pretty brutal. I love the turn of Strand. Like, it seems so typically Strand, but it even seems like more extreme Strand to just like basically stab that guy. And because, I mean, he was a useless tool. I hate to say it, but he was going to get killed anyway. So, might as well put him to some use, I guess, but, just, you know, coward through and through. And, I didn't see him doing that, but when I sat back and thought about it, it's like, yep, that's the kind of thing Strand would do. Cause Strand is a survivor, and Strand, will do some things that most people won't do. So, although I would probably say Daniel would do it, if he was in that situation and he wasn't playing the possum like he is right now. I nearly got duped. I was like sitting there going, come on, he can't be. And you know, it was finally in the last like minute, I'm like, oh, thank goodness he's not, you know, gone senile. And I agree that him revealing himself to Morgan made a lot of sense. So I think at this point I'm going to say goodnight and not participate in the rest of the podcast, but I'll say this was a decent episode. I only got to see it once, unfortunately. As I hinted at before, I couldn't even get through World Beyond. Part of it was my phone and tablet wouldn't let me. I will go back and watch it, you know, before next week. But the parts that I did see, I probably saw maybe 20 minutes of it. It just wasn't doing it for me, you know. It's not the show's not working for me, just like I figured. And Fear is working for me also, just like I figured. So, this season of these two shows are pretty much going as I figured. So, but that's about, I think, all that I have to say about both shows. I can't really think of anything like really negative to say. I guess maybe you could give a weak sauce to Sanjay for being just a useless tool. I mean, he survived, you know, the first, you know, the cold open, by being a coward, but, you know,
in the end, it didn't work.
Yeah. In the end, it didn't work. Here's another, I'll say this for awesome sauce, I guess. I don't think anyone's brought it up yet. Dakota, I liked, she is Virginia's sister, and why does this not surprise me that her sister would be her essentially, you know, going against her. It just seems like it would run in the family. But, you know, it seems to me that I guess she's seen enough of her sister to know that, you know, she can be ruthless and, you know, it's kind of not what she wants. So, anyway, I thought that was an interesting dynamic. They kind of look similar. So it's good when the casting actually works and you get, you know, sisters that actually look like they could be sisters. And it's awful when they don't. If you look at them and go, how are you?
Yeah,
No. Yeah.
That's true.
But yeah, so I mean, that's about all I'll say. So until next week. So,
all right. Okay.
Well, thank you, Brian. Give you a. Because we're going to miss you.
Yeah, you guys will be fine.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right. Thanks, Brian. We'll see you next week. And now we go on to our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
All right. Our first listener's weak sauce comes from Renee from Atlanta. And she says, it's been at least 3/4 years since the group has been out there in the new world. And they trust Dakota, Jenny's sister. Just like that, something seems a little suspicious about her. And it could possibly be me. I don't want to trust anyone but our guys. And that segues into my what? Which we'll get to next.
Deanna from Detroit says, the other red shirt rangers who turned their backs on a ramp full of walkers. I knew they were going to die. That was real smart. Point your guns at the living and turn your back on the dead. So not smart.
Yes.
And she had some laughing emojis.
Yep. Aaron from the internet goes on and says, Morgan Jones, again, I ask, why did we need him in this? They just wasted a full hour on him. Let us have some small breaks from him, please. I know the creators now think this is a show, but it's not. Morgan Jones will never be my lead for the reasons I watch the series. If anything, he makes me want to quit watching it because he's such a Mary Sue. They could have had anyone else show up in that moment and it would have been fine. But to have it be Morgan after we had to sit through a full episode about him just felt forced and I didn't like it. Angry emoji face. All right, Aaron, thank you for the feedback. And now that was it for our listeners. So let's go on to our weak sauce. LT?
All right. My question, as I alluded to earlier, is so why do they have a cattle ramp at a molasses plant?
Good question.
Now, I understand that, you know, stuff accumulates. It's the apocalypse. You unload a trailer, but that is a cattle ramp that you use to load cows or livestock on and off trailers. And the last time I checked, that has nothing to do with making molasses. So it just kind of seemed, because I mean, if it was a barrel ramp, it wouldn't have sides. I'm just saying it just seemed kind of out of place to me. I know they were playing the Sanjay up when he ran away and disappeared, but it's like, come on. They said the Rangers don't like runaways, but yet he managed to go all the way from inside the building outside out to hide an RV. And I mean, we sniped the guy that was running down the side of the building. So that was kind of weak for me. And of course, you know, we expected Strand to be Strand, but then poor Sanjay could not get a break, you know, got shanked and ended up being Walker bait. The magic stowaway Dakota. Nobody noticed her getting in the truck. Nobody noticed her hiding in the trailer. This is supposed to be a secure facility where you don't want people running off, and the Rangers are supposed to be, they don't like runners. So how did she manage to hide in the truck going into the penal facility? I mean, I like her character, but she turned out to be sort of the deus ex machina of this episode. that it just so happens that the big boss lady's sister shows up and saves the day. And my other pet peeve, and again, coming from somebody who has carried a gun for a living for two of their careers, I know that it's dramatic tension, but if he had to rack the slide to put a round in the chamber, that means the gun was empty. So the guy is standing there guarding all these prisoners and he doesn't have a round in the chamber. It's one of my big annoyances that if the guy is a guard, if he's on duty, if he's expecting trouble, the first thing they have to do is jack around in the chamber. That means the gun wouldn't work if somebody jumped out at him. Again, purely just from a professional standpoint, it's always bugged me when they do it in any of the other movies. So they get dinged here.
I have more on the Rangers, but that's in my what sauce.
Okay.
For my weak sauce, I kind of have to go though with like the whole, I mean, I enjoyed the whole cattle ramp, you know, set up and scene and that whole entire deal. Like I was like, okay, that's, you know, you made a good plan to like do this. So that part I didn't think was weak, but it's like, why, when they opened the door, why didn't you just let some of the walkers out and then close it? And then it would like,
yep,
you'd be able to just kind of like stem the onslaught and just like take care of them that way. But instead, you know, they just open it all the way up. And then, of course, Sanjay runs away. Woo. So,
well,
like,
that might be the reason they couldn't shut the door.
Well,
their door shutter had flown.
Right. But then Strand says, you know, later when they're like, Alicia's like, oh, my gosh, like we have a problem, when they're like, I guess the walkers are like falling over each other. It's like, hey, Sanjay, close the door. And of course, he ran away. But I was just like, that would have been much easier. Just like open, close, open, close, mm-hmm, open, close.
No argument for me.
Yeah. But then I also didn't understand why wasn't anybody on the side of the cattle ramp? Like, why wasn't people just like all lined up, just stabbing as things, you know, it's not going to matter if the walkers are piling up and crawling over each other. It's like, you could have thinned them out a bit. And so I just don't understand. It's like, why don't you have like, kind of like this, other, you had enough people, you could have had like one or two people on the other side, just like on each, just stabbing. So I was like, why did you just like wait till they all come down to the main gate, stab them, drag them off? You know, I don't know. I just kind of was like, oh.
I think they were worried about the production line aspect of it, that if you started stabbing them too far up the ramp, then the ramp would get clogged and they wouldn't be able to get down to the door.
Right. But then you could have still stabbed them on the side.
No argument. No argument there. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I thought that the walkers though were like really slow, and I guess if it was because of the molasses, you know, like maybe that made them stick the ground more or whatever, but I don't know. I felt like there was just like a lot of times where they're like our group was standing around, the walkers were just basically almost like standing there, just like not really move. They were like moving really, really slow. And like, everybody's like, oh, hey, I'm going to talk to you for like 2 seconds. And then turn around. It's like, okay, the walker barely moved. We've seen walkers move so much faster. And
they move at the speed the plot needs them to.
Yeah.
Because like our whole argument of ninja walkers that, you know, appear up out of the ground and they're on you in an instant. Because they need to, and I guess this time it was they need them to move slow while we do this interrogative and we have exposition. So,
yeah. Well, no, right. Exactly. There's a plot speed to the walkers. Oh, and my last what or week was basically Charlie showing up. I mean, I know you know how I feel about Charlie. I've said it many times, Charlie the Knit Killer. I don't know. I'm like, it's been a while since we had the show on. So then it was kind of like, oh, here we're in the Strand and Alicia episode. They're being put into this, you know, like, you guys did something bad, so we're going to punish you kind of thing. And then sure enough, oh, there's Charlie. I kind of at this point, I'm like, okay, fine, I'll let it go. But I just, at least for now, but I don't know. I just.
Well, yeah, but if Dakota's there, they have to have another teenage girl. Because you can't have one teenage girl by herself. You have to have two.
Well, then I guess, are they going to become chums at the end of this movie?
I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, Charlie does need something to redeem her more than just Alicia just forgiving her because of why.
Well, I mean, she was hanging out with Daniel. I mean, Daniel had sort of taken her on as his, you know, new child sidekick. And I know you have much bitterness about the Nick killing.
It's not necessarily just because of the Nick killing. It was just because it's like she never, I don't ever think, deserved or proved herself to being a part of the group. She just became a part of the group because she was like stranded because she didn't have a group to go to. And
right.
Alicia ended up basically kind of forgiving her, even though wanting to kill her in that whole one scene in the rainstorm. But in any case, yes, she's become a member of the group. I just still have an issue with her. So I'll let it go for now.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, that was it for our weak sauce. So let's go into our what sauce.
What?
All right. Our first listener's what sauce comes from Renee from Atlanta. Strand. I was beginning to like him, but if he's not doing a Eugene, he needs to die ASAP. I can't handle all of that treachery among my peeps. Alicia made me pull out my favorite make my butt look good jeans because she has took over Michonne in the jeans department. Girlfriend was wearing those jeans. Thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up.
And again, no argument for me.
Thanks, Renee.
Okay. Dead from Detroit's Strand using scary guys, fresh meat bait to lure away the Walker ambush after the horn trick doesn't work. And it's like
the
chin scratch thinking emoji.
Yeah. Glenn's from Toronto. She says Strand's cold hearted killing of Sanjay for the greater good of all. Shocking. I agreed, but I agree. It was shocking that I didn't think in the first watching, obviously I was like, oh, okay. But then after a while I thought about it, it's like, oh, that's Strand. I mean, he already alluded to the fact that he was just like, I'm trying to like do things my own way or like figure, you know, like whatever. It's
time for you to be a hero, Sanjay.
Oh, barely knew him. Sad. All right, go ahead with your what sauce.
Okay, for our what sauce, my question was, who's Janet?
Agreed.
When they showed up and they know who she is, I mean, was she one of the people they picked up there at the end when they were at...
What are the place that they were at? The ranch or the Humbug Gulch?
Yeah, Humbug Gulch.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say Hobnob Valley, but yeah, Humbug Gulch. Was she one of the people that was in that last crew of people? I mean, I was like, who's Janet? So, another what sauce that I have is, okay, so if the warehouse was a test, how come Strand got so much more leeway than the first group of people that got eaten? You know, that the first crew, maybe if they'd had time to come up with a plan and do something, they wouldn't have all gotten sucked under the door and eaten. But it just seems like it was, you know, more of an execution. Line them up at the door, give them a pokey thing, you know, crank it up, let him go and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then Strand was able to mop and move stuff around. And, you know, it just kind of made me wonder about that.
Yeah. No, I completely, basically that was exactly my what sauce too, was because it was like overall the Rangers, like, I mean, and I'm guessing on the Night Watch, they must've been either jerks because like when that first group, you know, showed up or whatever, it was like this is an execution, not actually like we want to see you like become a leader kind of thing. I don't even, it didn't seem like they even were given an opportunity to like resist or like, hey, I have an idea. They were like, nope, here, just we're pushing you this way and like whatever. But then after that, it's like, you know, the rest of the Rangers were all like, oh yeah, well, like they wouldn't even go near it.
Yeah. Maybe they just left it for night shift.
Right. Right. And so then obviously people like the day watch is not watching what the night watch is doing.
Well, they did say that the Rangers kind of do their own thing here. So maybe they were kind of like, eh, so she's got a plan. We got to get rid of these guys.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's the other part though, too, I thought was what, because it just like, okay, so after the night watch basically got taken out, the other Rangers were basically scared to even go there. So yeah, so Strand, and it seemed like all of them, like everybody, unless you're running away and the guy's like the sniper on the water tower, like sees you running for it, and he's going to shoot you. But it's like, they all seem very scared and just like, they just kind of like, okay, we don't want to kind of really do anything like with this other than maybe just like, we'll try to like, hey, don't run away, we'll shoot you.
Yeah. The conspicuous absence of anybody
like, yeah, monitoring or like
guardy.
Yeah. But that's what was so weird though. Cause then at the end, that girl Ranger, when the walkers broke out, you know, like, she called on her radio. She's like, break at the dock, evacuate immediately. And so I was like,
exactly.
And I was kind of like, so you guys are like basically really to me, not really much of a threat because you guys are too scared of like dealing with this. You're letting all the criminals or whatever, the people to being punished to kind of like do their own thing. But then also it was like, well, if this was a whole setup of like, you know, prove yourself as a leader. And it was like, unless this was a setup specifically for Strand by Jenny, then, you know, it's like they all just seemed to very like, I don't know. It just seemed
that was what I was going to get to. It just seems like that part of the story just kind of didn't work really well. That once, you know, once she called on the radio that there was a breakout, I mean, what did they do? Did they just go to the gate, lock the gate, and stand outside and see if anybody was going to run and jump over? I mean, it just...
Well, yeah, we never even got to even see that because obviously then she died.
Yeah.
It was like the rest of the Rangers, we never saw them again because...
Correct.
So...
And, you know, my other bit of whatness were the two Rangers at the dock. So they're going to get Dakota. They turn their back on the walkers. And then they completely fold up whenever, you know, yeah. I'm like, situational awareness, people. It's a 360 degree world. You know, it just seems like it was very convenient for the people with guns suddenly to get eaten. And then we have, oh, look, you know, after Sanjay got shanked, then it's like, hey, we have two fully loaded rifles that we can use. It just seemed like that was their whole job, was to die in place to give equipment so they could, yeah, so they could finish off the walkers.
Yeah. No, yeah. I can't argue and, with that.
Yeah. And we keep saying, oh, well, the Rangers are, you know, they're tough and they're, you know, all this other stuff. Well, they weren't really tough then. So that was just a what for me.
Yeah. And then I'll have to like just add that. It was like, yes, and exactly, slow walkers, because they were all just like basically klutzing over that little, like, you know, after they broke through the side gate or side barrier, and then they just all were like falling on top of each other. But then everybody had enough time to talk about stuff and like grab Dakota. But mm-hmm. then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and you turn your back against like you turn your back against the threat, and oh then you get grabbed and like you fell. It's like, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure like I would have enough adrenaline pumping in my body that I'd be like, I'm fight my way out of this and not just, well, like, oh, I'm going to fall.
even if you can't pull the trigger, you still got what, 6 or 7 pounds of metal in your hand, you know, swing it, hit them with the butt, do something. And like you said, once that one pallet failed, you know, and the walkers are doing the spasmo dive off the loading dock, you know, to go back to one of my old favorite cartoons, they're doing the boneless chicken, you know, off the dock, and then all of a sudden they're back on their feet and they're biting people. Yep.
Plot walkers.
Yep.
All righty. Well, all right. Let's go into the next. Is the sad and aw sauce.
Aww.
First listener, sad aw sauce, comes from Erin from the internet. And she says, again, Alicia and Strand. Coleman and Alicia just gave me such feelings with these characters. You could just feel Strand wanting to do all he could to protect her because she is his last link also to Madison. And she's one of the only ones who will ever fully know what he's done to get to the point he is. And you have Alicia doing all she can in her mind to arguably save Strand's soul because she doesn't want to lose him either because he is one of the last originals. And I don't think she could take losing him so soon after Madison leaving. There's so much tied up in these two in regards to their relationship with each other, their dynamics as individuals interacting, and their history connection with Madison. It just got me and made me feel like this was watching an old episode of the series. It was a good feeling until the very end. Was it on the same quality as old episodes? That I can't say for sure, but seeing the originals be the focus of an episode again and then showing debates among characters and them talking each thing out and everyone getting some of their opinions heard, that was great.
Okay, Glenn from Toronto says, shame. Charlie is so distressed that Daniel doesn't remember her. That'll be a nice reveal to watch in a future episode when she realizes that he remembers her after all. And I agree.
Yep. All right. Well, that was all our listeners' sad aw sauce. LT, you have some?
I do. The look that Strand had on his face when he was putting Alicia and Charlie in the truck. That I'm taking a kind of a different angle on it than we got from the listeners, that I think that Strand has feelings for her, but Strand also realizes that she would be more willing to call his bluff. She knows him better, and I think that he can't be as Strandy as he wants to be with her there, because he pretty much said it, that, you know, you make me realize what I could be, and I can't be that way if you're here. So he's doing it to protect her, but he's also doing it because he might be doing some next level ruthless stuff. So you could tell that it was a heartstring moment for him, but I think he's going to be pulling some stuff out.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And unlike you, I'm not so torn up about Charlie being the Nick killer. And I thought it was kind of sad when, you know, just the way, well, again, props to the actor, the way that she looked when she almost got, you know, eaten there on the ramp, that, you know, she had a redemption arc with Daniel, and having one of the main characters get eaten, you know, this early into the season, you know, that was kind of an emotional moment there.
I can agree. I don't like Charlie.
Well, I know. And I don't dislike her nearly as much as you do. I dislike her more for being, you know, being the weasel at the ballpark. You know, we've discussed my feelings about Nick, so
yep.
Her off of Nick was not so bad.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of this world. To each his own. We can disagree to agree. Oh, goodness. All right, yeah, I didn't really have other than – I didn't have any sad aw sauce. I put some stuff in the feedback that kind of is hitting on a lot of the points you said about Alicia and Clark, so I'll just go into them then. But other than that, let's go on to our feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Well, we have our first listeners of feedback. Dieta, you want to take that, LT?
I will. She says Daniel is the greatest. He is up to something, and he doesn't trust Strand after that side deal he did with Virginia. I'm glad he did that, because now a Daniel and Morgan reunion, yeah, it's about to go down. They're going to wreak havoc on Virginia and her Rangers once they get the others together. And that includes Strand as well, especially if he really is siding with Virginia and the Rangers, since he has a key now. What does the key really mean? And did Strand sell our group out by getting a deal for himself? If so, Strand is up to his old ways again, scamming and scheming to put himself in the high spot. So did he not include Alicia in his army? I missed that dialogue and didn't have time to go back, so I missed what he told her. Just saw him give her the St. Christopher necklace that Daniel gave him. Overall, it was a decent episode. Did anyone else think how the Ranger driving Daniel at the end looked awfully weak and small? Another red shirt, because he's going to die after talking to Daniel like that. And also, Virginia's sister actually looked like her, as we've already noticed. Extra stuff. Virginia, or the actress who plays her, is on The Boys on Amazon.
Yep.
Which is true. We had talked about that last week, I think. And she says, welcome to the team, LT. Loving that accent.
Yay.
And it may get worse as time goes on.
No. Oh, there's no, nope, not at all. So happy to have you on, LT. This is like, we're going to have a great season. I'm excited. Going over Dieta's stuff, the one thing we do know about Strand, and we've seen this in the past, you know, with him, you know, at the dam, dealings with between him and Daniel, whenever he was like the Daniel and Strand were not friends. Like, Strand does have a knack to kind of come up with a conniving plan of some sort, you know, but it is a very, like, I don't know if you want to call it like a selfish plan, or he's like, he wants to distance anybody. Yeah. He was that from season one. Like,
yep.
He played Nick because he was trying to get to his boat and to survive to get, you know, to Abigail, you know, it was like, he's a con man. And so that's where his strengths are. But I think what we're seeing is there is that troubled issue, or that troubled mind of, you know, we see in him, especially how he was looking at Alicia and Charlie. It's just like, he cares about these people. Like, we're seeing a con man who cares.
Well, it's the old thing about the con man with a heart of gold. He actually does care about them, but I think he's tried to compartmentalize things. Because if you look at the way his characters progressed in the very beginning, he was out for himself.
Yeah.
And if you could help him get somewhere, he would take care of you up until the point you couldn't anymore. And he changed from that. And I think that we're going to see a return to that sort of behavior is kind of my feeling on it.
Yeah. And it's like, it's basically exactly why he's sending Alicia away, because he can't have her like around him, because that's going to make that connection, and he can't do the things that he wants to do with having basically her sitting there and him having the feelings or whatever, you know. It's like he's pushing her away so that he can do the thing that he's good at.
Right. And to be honest, she would call him. She would call him on his BS too.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's why, like, I kind of went into this in my feedback, but I'll bring it up here. It was just like the whole, basically the whole Strand and Alicia's little, like, whole conversation this whole episode, it was like Strand was doing what Strand does. He's like, no, I'm like, I want, you know, like, we have to do it this way. We have to take the Rangers out. I'm following my instincts and this and that. But Alicia was taking the total, like, her mother, Madison, aspects. It's like, no, we're going to make the decisions, but we are going to make these, you know, decisions. And Strand went along with that, and it didn't work out the way he wanted it to. And so, you know, it's kind of like, I guess it's, you know, then that's when he's like, oh, no, I cannot have her around me. She's making me make the wrong decisions, going against my instincts. And
right.
You know, we're going to see this play out, obviously, this episode, like, the season. But it's like, seeing that in exchange between them two during this episode was, it brought me back to old Fear, you know, like,
yep,
like Madison, and like, you know, it was definitely a very, one of the highlights of this whole episode was just that exchange. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, I have to give that just huge, just excitement about what's to come, because that was awesome.
Yep.
And we got a response from Renee from Atlanta to Dieta's feedback just now. And she said, girl, thanks so much for reminding me about the most important part of the episode, in my opinion, the freaking key. I was rambling all over the place that I totally forgot to mention the key. Last week at the submarine, something was said about the key. Then Jenny said something about the key. Then Strand was wearing the key. Looked like he's been hoodwinked. Facepalm emoji. This key is the key to everything in my Ginny voice. crying out loud emojis, lots of them. Yeah, the key obviously is a very key part, I think, of this season.
Yep.
I think it's
going to be a thing.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, does the key actually work for anything? Because the first in the cold open, the ranger that got eaten at the end had the key on his jacket.
I think it's just like a symbol of rank.
Because I'm like, well, I mean, I guess when they did finally clear the place out, did they find that and she pulled it off? And, oh no, here. I'm curious. Does a key actually mean a key to something, or is it just a symbol?
I think it's just symbolic, yeah, since their flag has a key on it.
Yeah. And Alicia's like, oh, I see you got the key to the city. So doesn't really work for anything. All right. Well, next, our next listener feedback comes from Glenn, is from Toronto. And she says, I wonder why Dakota wants to have her sister killed so badly. Or was she just egging on Strand and Alicia to clear the walkers on the instructions of her sister? That's a good question. I wouldn't trust her motive at all, but Virginia did seem overly panicked and worried about the whereabouts of her sister. Dakota can cross over to the Walking Dead world beyond then to act out there. Yeah, she's okay. That just made me even think more about it and like laugh. Okay. Good one, Glynis. She goes on, it doesn't sit well that Strand is now this cold-hearted killer. What else will he now be prepared to do with Alicia gone to another location so she can influence him morally now? That's going to be the key.
Oh, keys.
Yep. Can't wait to see what Morgan and Daniel cook up and plot against Virginia. Yep. The whole Morgan Daniel at the end, it just... There's something going on.
Something's going on.
Yep.
Well, we got some more from Aaron from the internet. Now, this episode is an episode of Fear the Walking Dead I can get behind because it feels like the series and characters I fell in love with, well, at least regards to Strand and Alicia. There were some issues with this episode, but on the whole, this has me saying that finally Fear is back this year because we get to see the characters we started with so long ago. You could tell the moment the Dakota character popped up, she would either be Jenny's kid or someone related to her, so the reveal that she's her sister was not a surprise to me. Me either. This was a good job by the casting department and the actress to sound like the actress playing Jenny. I do feel that she's on the up and up about wanting to leave the compound because Virginia has gone too far, but we'll see if she makes it until the end or not to help stop her sister. Is it just me, or does it feel like they're really going teens with the casting? Is it just because they can get more mileage out of them acting-wise? The introduction of her plus the new show, which features kids, just leaves me asking, if this new cast coming because the older actors are getting ready to move on soon or may want to do other projects in the future? I did like Dakota in this episode, so we'll see where they go with her. I also love Daniel being Shifty Daniel. I never believed even with the mark on his head, Daniel forgot like he was pretending. He's a master of the long game, so I'm definitely just waiting for him to make his move each week because usually the payoff to his plots are worth the wait.
Yep. Well, I'll take over. She continues, another shifty McGee. I'd love to see what Strand, but again, it also hurts to see him back because of how much it hurts Alicia. Strand says at the end, he has to forget who he is to do the things that needs to be done. But the irony is the person he's pretending to be is who we saw originally. The man who would sacrifice someone for the betterment of what he wanted. The man who made deals behind people's backs, and the man who has a secret soft spot and is always plotting. So I didn't see it as dramatic as he thinks it was, and I just wish Alicia had called him out a bit more on that. I do wonder if Madison would be okay or not with Strand sending Alicia away, because while it may protect her for a while, it isn't a long-term plan. And again, how is it that going to affect her if he never comes back? Will they talk about the characters' histories and things they've done? I do wonder how much is Strand, Alicia, and how much is Coleman and Alicia remembering the good old days, as it were, and being affected by that and showcasing it in their performances. Again, they were easily the highlight of the episode, smiley face. I do wonder how Alicia will feel when she learns Strand killed Sanjay to basically save them all. She knows this is a character for him, but can she forgive him this time, or will it be a step too far and her kind of pull from him? I hope not, because I don't want to lose any more original fears than we have to, but there has to be a consequence of some kind for that. You know, Strand is probably keeping that one girl in laundry duty because it's easy to spy on people and overhear information that way. Speaking of easy to call plots, who wants to bet Jenny tries to use Strand's soldier against Morgan by putting the others up as leverage? It won't work long term, but it's not going to surprise me if that's the big show has planned for them. Well, I mean, we don't know who this girl is. What was her name?
Janet.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, my first thought was just the fact that it was like, okay, well, they've been with Jenny's compounds for a while, I guess now. And so it's like Strand and Alicia were probably not together at the beginning and then, you know, met new people, whatever. But it was kind of like, oh, let's just throw somebody new. And we're like, who is that? And it's like, oh, I guess Strand knows her. Okay. So
yeah,
it's just, and she had a name and she was on the caption. So it's like, okay. Give her, she's in the cast. She goes on, I do have a goof to gripe about this episode, and that is at the factory we see a guard on the tower, but when the zombies come out, he's not shooting and he's nowhere to be found post Virginia arriving. So what happened to him? Well, they all ran away. Mm-hmm. Yep. I doubt he came down from the tower, as that would be dumb to do until all the zombies had left. But what happened to him? Did he see Strand kill Sanjay? And if so, will he speak up to that? Again, beyond the forced Morgan content at the end, this was a great episode. It made me feel like I was watching an honest episode of Fear again. Next week, it looks like Al is the lead of the main crew, which makes me wonder, is she going to be the theme of the season until they reunite? After her, will they be focused on John Dory or June? Maybe Luciana, since we see her in the trailers too. I think we mentioned it, or maybe we mentioned it last episode. But yeah, it's like I feel like their whole kind of like scheme of this season so far is just like they're going to do like the bottle episodes of like these characters, and we're only going to get like, you know, like we got Strand and Alicia this episode, so maybe we'll get Al, and then who knows, you know, it's like
whoever went with her.
Yeah. And, or maybe a new character or something, you know, somebody, but it's just going to be about, Althea. And then the next episode will then hopefully be John and June. And then, you know, they'll keep doing this. And then maybe the back half is when we finally, everything comes back to where it's just everyone, you know, we might get an episode where it's just Daniel, wherever he's going, you know, and like, which I know.
Paradise Falls.
Well, yeah. So it's like,
is that it?
Yeah. So it's like, we'll got to see what's going on there. And, you know, obviously Daniel has a plan of some sort.
Well, I kind of see it as, since they made such a big point to split everybody up when they had the season finale, mm-hmm. that's the device they're going to use. They're going to use everybody in their split up state, and this, we can assume there's a Daniel Morgan plan to try to get everybody back together. So I have a feeling this is going to be, I mean, we've seen this trope in Walking Dead a million times.
Yeah.
You know, whenever the, you know, whenever they left the prison, whenever they left different places under stress, they break into small groups. You have small stories with the small groups, and then they eventually all come back together.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I think that's what we'll expect.
Yep. Okay, we got some more from Renee from Atlanta. Overall, the show was pretty good, and I do love the Western theme, and Morgan is going to look really nice once Daniel shapes that beard up. I'm feeling the beard on Morgan, and Kyle, I love your beard as well. And really, who couldn't tell that was Morgan by those feet? He is so slew-footed. Facepalm emoji. I don't know if this is part... if this part is going to make the cut or not, that's fine. I want to say the blackout for BLM on Brian's page and Kyle saying his husband on the podcast spoke volumes to me. I salute you guys for being part of the solution and not part of the problem, because we're all the same. We should all be like our favorite show and love one another no matter the color of your skin or a person's sexual orientation or political views. You guys rock. And four hearts.
Thank you, Renee. It's like, oh, thank you. That was, we're just doing what we love. That's all that matters. We love hearing from our like listeners. We're glad that we're doing a podcast that, you know, everybody can contribute. So that's all right. That matters. It doesn't matter anything else. It's just, we're having fun.
We are.
Yep. All right. Well, that was all that we had for our listeners' reviews. So let's go into our reviews. LT, you're first.
Okay. Well, my only thing is when they had the big sign that said Lawton. And whenever I think of Lawton, I think of Lawton, Oklahoma, yeah, where I spent many, many days in those halcyon days of my youth serving my country. So whenever they said Lawton, the first thing I thought of is, okay, what about Fort Sill? And just sidebar, and I know he may not be listening, but for, you know, James, our pal, the sailor, who may not know about Army things, Fort Sill is a really big Army base in Oklahoma that's near Lawton. That's the town that's nearby. And that makes me think, well, if they're near Fort Sill, that's like Army stuff and trucks and housing, and we don't know what kind of shape that's in. That may just be me kind of running with that, because there may be a Lawton, Texas. I don't know.
I'm from Oklahoma.
So, exactly.
Yeah, like I'm sooner born and sooner bred. like my first thought was when I saw that sign, I was like, because knowing that they're in Texas, but we know Jenny's got a very vast territory of like
she got a lot of territory.
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of saw kind of a bit of a map last season, a little bit of one, but it's like I would not be surprised. But yeah, the first thought I came to mind is it said Lawton, and I'm like, that has to be Lawton, Oklahoma. I have to look it up, but I've never heard of Lawton, Texas.
I'm sure
there is one, but not.
Well, and the same thing for me is that there may be a Fayetteville, Arkansas, but if you say Fayetteville, I think about Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see how that pans out.
Yeah, because I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm sure that could be another, like, it's a military base. There'd be equipment, and there'd be other things there, and
exactly
could come into play later.
And the other thing I noted about this episode, along the same veins, was having them burning latrine contents. Yeah, anybody that went to the Gulf in the last couple of rounds knows about, can I say shitter?
You can say shitter.
Well, anyway, that's one of those really, really unfun kind of things that you have to do. And I was thinking, okay, so they've got stand-up latrines. They don't have pit latrines. So that was kind of that a little too authentic but a good touch. And I did think it was funny when the ranger was saying, you know, where are you burning that? You know, I've got to eat lunch. And just from get away with my field sanitation course back in the day, they were burning those barrels a little close to the house. Of course, considering I won't say they're convicts, but you know, they're kind of keeping an eye on Strand and Alicia. So they probably didn't want them going too far, but I think I would have had my crap burning station a little further away from.
Yeah. Like a little bit further out of town.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't know that burning poo is like a thing.
It's a thing that, you know, at scout camp, we had the pit latrines. So basically they've got a huge, because it's a fixed facility, they have a huge concrete basin under the latrine, and they throw some lye in there every once in a while. But basically you've just got this big tank of poop. And because of the nature of the business, they will bring in the truck and pump them out at the end of camp season.
Yeah.
But if you've got a facility where you can't really dig holes, or you're not going to be that permanent, or, you know, water table, the type of soil, they'll basically have the latrine floor will be raised and you'll have a cut off barrel underneath it.
And
it just sort of collects there, and then part of the not fun jobs is somebody has to go around and collect all that up and take it off and burn it.
That's news to me, or maybe I'd never gotten there. I was in scouts, and it was like, I don't remember ever having to deal with like anything.
Well, the burning stuff is primarily military. That's something that the Army and the Marines are more known for. But
I guess it just like everything, it burns and gets rid of it. So it just,
yep. Because it's a sanitary hazard if you just, you know, throw it out on the ground, and bugs and flies and disease and all that
stuff. Yeah, no, that would make sense. I was just kind of like, oh, I'm sure there's a quarry somewhere that you can just haul it off to and dump it and be like, hey, I don't have to deal with this. But you're right. I guess that does make sense. It's like, you don't want to, like, if there was a water supply. Yep. Oh, my God, we just spent how much time talking about burning poop?
Well, we go where the information takes us, Kyle.
That's awesome. Well, unless you have anything else to say, nope. I like already talked about Strand and Alicia earlier, but I kind of was like, I don't know. It's like, does Jenny really think that all she needs to take down Morgan, which, I mean, she was saying to Strand that the whole deal about clearing out the walkers was like, oh, it's like, I need like someone to be a leader and to lead the army. And like, you know, and she did say something basically like, you know, it's like, or no, actually, I guess Dakota said, it's like, oh no, this is a weapon that she wants to use against someone she's been trying to kill or whatever. And I get that it's like, she wants to take down Morgan. And I guess she also does want somebody that kind of help her control the population.
Right.
So, like being a leader to tamp down the resistance, have somebody to rally against so that she can kind of coalesce power with. So, I mean, I kind of get that, but it's just like, I don't really see how this is going to work. And I'm assuming it's not, because it's just obviously there's too many people against her. Strand's already plotting. Daniel's already plotting. You know, it's like Alicia's going to be plotting. There's people like Dakota or like her own sister's plotting.
But see, that's why she split them up. I think she's thinking that they're only a threat if they're all together. And just my two cents worth on it is, I think she thinks that Strand is compromisable. Because remember, Strand gave her the starter for the SWAT bus.
Yeah, I know.
Strand worked out his deal. So I think if she offers him enough of a carrot that his loyalty can be purchased, and if she thinks that whatever she offers him is better for him, then he will do the self-serving thing over the right thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's just the way I'm seeing that.
No, and I definitely agree like with that. I just obviously I'm like, I don't, yeah, it's not going to work, Jenny. it's a very interesting plot and, you know, like angle to all this, just because it's just like the one thing that I keep hearing though is like these people, especially Dakota, keeps bringing up the tapes. You know, they keep bringing up that it's like, oh no, we know who you are. Yeah, we saw the tapes. We saw the tapes. Yeah, we want to like they keep coming back to the tapes, which like last season was kind of a horror. You know, just it was what it was. But that thread keeps coming in here, and it's like, okay, so the populace, at least some of the populace, knows that they were out there trying to build a better world and this and that. And so regardless of whatever Jenny's going to try to do and this, all this stuff, it's like, girl, you got to do a little bit more, you know, like insurance policies, because this is not going to work. If you're just relying solely on Strand, I think you're just kind of a con man. And I totally can like appeal to your, you know, selfishness or self-preservation, that it's just like, there's too many other people that are just like, you know what? Well, it's kind of like a Hunger game. It's like everybody go against the Capitol, you know, we're all going to band together from all the, you know, all the different districts, and you're just going to get overrun in the end anyways.
I'll be strangely cynical and say they had to pay off the whole tape thing from last season. You know, they had to make that mean something. So this is their way of making that plot wrinkle pay off.
Well, then.
and I do agree with you that people saw the tapes and people know. And I think the thing with Jenny you have to look at is this kind of the Roman Empire thing, that the Roman Empire at one point was so big they had to rely on their regional governors to carry out the policy of the central government. So it could be that some of these other outposts are pulling at the leash more than Jenny would like. So we're thinking about this, and Strand is going to form this army to go get Morgan. I'm kind of thinking that there may be, you know, and I realize it's in Maryland, so don't send me hate mail, but, you know, Pocomoke, Arkansas, or some other little town that is technically under her control. But the mayor of that town may be thinking, well, hey, she never comes by here. I may just set up my own little fiefdom. So it's an idea. I mean, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's a good point. And like, you know, it is, just to put it out there too, it's just like, yeah, what we know at this point, we're seeing a lot of Morgan. So it's kind of like, okay, that's the obvious thing that we're seeing is like, oh, she hates Morgan. She wants him dead. She's going after him. So she's trying to play this. But yeah, you're not thinking about like, oh, who are the far regions of this whole, you know, whatever they call it, the settlers, pioneers, or whatever her whole region is. So it is, she's trying to consolidate power so that, yeah, she can be like, hey, all you outlying areas fall in line because I now have an army. And that's, I hope we see something like that. Cause if it's just all about Morgan, then yeah, that's going to be a misstep.
And I'll be the very first to say that if I go on record saying this now, I will end, if I have to, you know, eat my words, and it was not that subtle and nuanced at the end of the season, that it really was just all about Morgan, then, well, we'll just go with it when it gets here.
All righty then. So let's move on to the kids show.
Yay.
Yay. Which you had a lot more to say to this because I was not able to watch it. But so, okay. The Walking Dead World Beyond season one, episode 3, The Tiger and the Lamb. It was written by the Faranis, which I looked that up and it's a Silvash Faranis or Farani. And if I totally made that wrong, sorry. I just trying to say the best I can. But they're the executive story editor of Fear this season. Mm-hmm. It was directed by Sharat Raju, which did Walking Dead, What We Become, season 10, episode 3, which was Michonne's, Diane Guerrero's last episode. And he also directed Fear, The Little Prince, season 5, episode 6, and Blackjack, season 4, episode 13. Okay. The description is, burdened by their past, members of the group adopt opposing strategies for dealing with the massive obstacle. Pressure is put on the group to return home. All right, LT, what do you got?
Okay, well, since somebody said something about it, the title comes from the William Blake poem, you know, The Tiger, Tiger Burning Bright in the Forest of the Night. That whole, the tiger and the lamb, that's why it's spelled with a Y, because it was spelled with a Y in the poem. And I think the allusion was going to be for Silas, because this was a very Silas-centric episode. He had a lot of flashbacks. We sort of got the background of how he ended up in Omaha. And from just the way they played it, I'm going to assume that he snapped on somebody and he beat somebody up badly enough that they were going to do something with him, and that he ended up coming to live with his uncle because whatever bad situation he had been in. This episode, we see Hope, the quote-unquote bad sister, taking lots of risks. Despite getting better judgment from Iris, you know, she goes off on her own. She climbs, goes to the warehouse. She goes to the top of the building. She breaks the siren. She fixes the siren. So, you know, Hope is kind of in her role as the bad sister, as the wild child. You know, she's the one that seems to be the extreme risk taker of the bunch. I'm just going to say it now. They're playing it that she has kind of a fire thing. You know, we had talked about this in the first episode. Now that she's tossed her Zippo, she just had that look in her eye every time she looked at fire. So I think that's part of the burgeoning teen angst that we were going to be dealing with in this.
And she wasted a perfectly good
Zippo. Good Zippo. As we both said when we were talking about this earlier, if you're going to throw a lighter in a pool, make sure it's a dollar crack lighter and not a $20 Zippo. So Silas has problems hitting walkers. That he had that moment when you thought he was going to just crush that walker with the melted on gas mask and he just kind of froze up. And I put it in my notes, he sort of ends up being the Walking Dead equivalent of Hodor. He's basically carrying everybody's backpacks, and he's the big strong guy, but he can't fight because, for whatever reason, he can't kill.
Are you predicting his death?
I don't know. I don't think we're that far along yet. So after the freeze up, you know, Silas and Iris share a moment together. They finally make it into the building. I forgot his name again. The corduroy suit kid. They find a door that's stuck shut. And when they finally boot the door open, who do they find but Felix and Huck?
Yeah.
So there's some you know, expositional content there of what are you doing here? We need to leave. We got to go. Where's Hope? And of course, Hope's on top of the building, breaking the siren. So Hope fixes the siren. There's lots of running through the smoke as the siren sounds. A tense moment as Hope nearly gets eaten and gets away from the walkers. I sort of expected them to do the, when she jumped off the ladder, she kind of turned her ankle, so she was hobbling, so I expected that to come into it. As they're all trying to rush to escape, a huge wall of stacked up tires starts to lean over precipitously, and Silas throws off everybody's backpacks, and I'll just editorially say he throws them off away from where they were going, back towards the walkers. And so he heroically holds up the wall of collapsing tires while somebody has to run behind him and snatch the backpacks. And so he lets the wall of tires go. And of course, the wall of collapsed tires keeps the walkers from getting them. And once they leave the factory full of smoke and fire, they end up at a very pretty lake. And while they're at the lake doing the lakeside thing, our two sisters have a long heart-to-heart. Iris and Hope talk. Hope spills her guts about when her mom died. Felix wants to go to Oklahoma. Or, excuse me, Felix wants to go to Omaha. We've already been in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But basically, Felix wants to take everybody back. He says, look, we're not going back through that. We'll take the long way around. We'll go back to the main Omaha settlement, get some supplies. The girls still want to go after their dad, and that's where we left them. So back at the unknown location of where the Civic Republic is, the Sergeant Major shows up at the Lieutenant Colonel's apartment. They have a discussion. She tries to talk reason to him. There's air quotes reason. But he basically is having a real bit of heartache with what they did to the people at the campus. They drink some soup. They have a conversation. The black-clad, masked security people show up at the door and basically say, well, you're going to the Civic Republic. What do they call it? Rest and relax. Basically, they're sending him to the re-education camp. If he can't get his head screwed back on, then basically he's going to be never be trusted to do military stuff again. He'll be doing labor. Or if he can't get his head screwed back on at all, then he'll probably stay at the re-education camp. And the very last thing we see is the colonel turning everything on in her house because they still have TV. It looks like they have PBS because it was educational programming. But she turns on her coffee grinder. She turns on the radio. She turns on the ceiling fan. And when they were dragging him off, what was it he kept saying? It's like, you know what we did was wrong. You know what we did was wrong or something to that effect. And of course, she remains kind of hard and stoic until the very last moment where she kind of cracks a little bit and you see the teardrops fall onto the map. So that's pretty much the what I thought about the tiger and the lamb.
I only got to watch it once, so I didn't really wasn't able to really add to that. Like, that's the thing. It's like the right now with all like, you know, Hope and feel or just all of them like that, there's their story. They're doing their stuff. But it's like when we get like the little glimpse of the CRM, like that's kind of fun because they're only giving us little bits of it. And so it's kind of we're getting like this a little bit more information. And I'm actually more interested in that than I am about their journey to find their dad. You know, well, it's like,
and that's part of the reason I'm still watching it is that it's not that this, you know, this road trip saga is being so enticing for me, but they keep throwing us all these little nuggets about the, you know, the CRM and right. the other settlements and, you know, the Confederation or whatever they were calling the settlements. So we're getting some of the information that they've been teasing us with for quite some time in both the main show and through the last couple episodes or the last couple seasons of Fear. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching it because they're letting us know stuff that we've been wondering, but the story's just not grabbing me hard. I mean, I'm watching it. It's not that it's a pain to watch, but it's just not, it's not something I'm, you know, biting my fingernails, you know,
right. yeah.
on the edge yeah. of the seat wanting to see.
Well, yeah. And we know that obviously this is all tying into the movies, tying mm-hmm. into Rick. And so it's like, okay, we're getting like, that's yeah. I'm like watching it because it obviously comes on right after Fear. And then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's like just passively watching it or, you know, once I can. I didn't watch this until, yesterday when I was just rewatching Fear or whatever. But it was kind of like, I mean, like that is why I'm doing it. I'm like, I want to hear about this other group because I know that's tied in with the movies. And so it's like, even though however long that's going to be till we finally get that, it's just like, okay, cool. This is the back, you know, then we'll know exactly, oh, here's the script. Cause I'm sure this is a two season, World Beyond is two seasons, which basically they've already mapped it out. They already written it all, you know, they already know exactly what they're doing. So it's like, okay, if we have to kind of get through the whole kid stuff, hey, get to at least get, you know, the information that we need or want to hear.
It's a fixed quantity. We know how long it's going to be. So we kind of have gone into this with an end game in mind.
Right. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, that's why I'll keep watching it. And, you know, it's like, that's why I have a DVR. Yep. Just like, I'll watch it when I get to it. Awesome. Well, we did get some viewer feedback for The World Beyond. And so our first came from Glennis from Toronto, and she says, The World Beyond, I'm enjoying the episode so far, and it's showing a lot of promise. The character development has been good, and I like how each one has a hang-up or secret that'll be fleshed out more in the coming episodes. I was wondering if Silas killed his grandparents or killed someone in order to avenge or protect his grandparents, as he's listening to that tape of them continually. That's why he doesn't want to kill again. He's afraid of the violence brewing within him. Maybe. The CRM side story is intriguing. And of course, there's always the underlying theme of what have you done with Rip Grimes? Exactly. mm-hmm. And now he's managed to survive in this violent take no prisoners organization. This series doesn't really deserve all the bad ratings it's getting at the moment, as it's building in each episode. Gimple and Negretti know what they're doing, and they've got the whole picture in front of them. So I'll start making sense after a while, and all those series will start to join up into one and have, as I said before, the Keys, Commonwealth, and CRM going into war against each other. That's at least what I think is the plan. I think that's what we're all kind of like trying to like put together, and that's actually...
I mean, I'm not so invested in my opinion that I can't start liking it.
I'm for that. You know, I'm like, let's just, it is kind of like one of those things where I'm like, well, did we need to have this many different series to kind of do all this? You know, it's like,
right.
You know, it's not like we need like another spinoff to kind of like, oh, add another little element. It kind of like they could have done this with just The Walking Dead main, you know, prime, and in like, and built these stories to lead to the same thing.
And I think that's that right there. You hit on it, is that could we have given this information and developed this side story organically to the series that we already had?
Yeah. And not like have a whole two,
the whole three, another like, a whole another spinoff.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
okay. That's it in a nutshell.
Yep. All right. Well, let's continue on to our next listener's feedback for The World Beyond. It comes from Dieta from Detroit. And she says, I have to watch again, unfortunately. This episode didn't hold my attention like the first two. I know they kept giving us the backstory of Silas, and I just didn't get it. Shrug emoji. I don't know. So did he choke somebody out? Was he being bullied and had enough and then finally retaliated? Everybody was afraid of him or avoiding him because of what happened. So what happened? Thinking emoji.
Yep.
Thinking I missed something with the purposes of backstory. And yes, they are both beautiful young ladies.
Okay. Ray from Atlanta says, The World Beyond was a little bit better this week if you could get past the suspension of belief where Hope takes apart the siren and puts it back together again. Eye roll. As if she's been doing it all her life. Brian, you said Hope was too pretty. I was thinking about Iris, and both of their hair looks wiggy to me. I started following them on Instagram, and not only are they both gorgeous, their hair is gorgeous as well. Silas finally seems as if he's getting some you know what, because the downtrodden, sad young boy was beginning to work my nerves. Elizabeth seems a little off her rocker. It's like always the cuckoo for Cocoa Puff type that's always trying to run things. I'm not feeling Huck, but Felix, yeah, he's gonna definitely keep those kids safe. Overall, she says 7 out of 10. Welcome to the world where kids cannot be kids. Winky, winky, winky.
Yeah. To be continued.
Yep. We'll see what happens.
Okay. So I am back for this section of the episode to discuss the thing that I love to talk about, which is the ratings.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
So, Fear the Walking Dead got a 0.44 in the 18 to 49 with 1.546 million viewers. That is up in the coveted demographic of 0.41 last week, which is really awesome, actually. Normally, the second episode goes down from the previous one. So the fact that it went up is actually a good thing. In the total number of viewers, though, it was down slightly. It got a 1.546 million viewers versus last week's 1.590 million. The Walking Dead World Beyond was also sort of up. It got a 0.30 in the 18 to 49 with 1.040 million viewers. And I say sort of up because it got last week a 0.29 in the 18 to 49 with the identical 1.040 million viewers. So, and I also took a look at the 18 to 34 numbers, and I was surprised to see that World Beyond got a 0.16 versus 0.23 for Fear. So Fear even beat that out for it seems like that's the demographic World Beyond is going for. And of course, there was no Talking Dead this week. So as you guys can see, the charts that have been made up, and you can see those charts that I do every week on the Facebook group. I also was able to pull the Parrot analytics for this week, and in the total of all shows, that's including broadcast and cable and online, streaming stuff, or as they call them, digitals. digital original. The Walking Dead was in number six position. Now, when I say The Walking Dead, it was not Fear the Walking Dead or The Walking Dead World Beyond. Whether or not they have their own categories on Parrot Analytics, I don't know, but the only one I've ever seen on here is just The Walking Dead. Anyway, it came in number six with 57.5 times demand versus the average title. And number one this week was SpongeBob.
What?
Exactly.
Always SpongeBob.
Yeah, SpongeBob, for some reason, it still
gets a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, so as far as like the digitals, The Boys got a was in number four, and Star Trek Discovery made the digital top 10, but you don't see it here on the, you know, overall top 10. So anyway, that is it for Parrots.
Well, I guess I have some news of my own. It's like after 2.5 years, I am no longer a Nielsen family. So basically over the last 2.5 years, I've been, you know, Nielsen put a whole bunch of this equipment into my house and on my TVs, and everything I watch basically has been, you know, I've been recording, you know, all the, you know, everything I watch, you know, I log in and like, you know, do this other, you know, like, it's kind of a really simple system, but it's coming to an end, and it's kind of sad because it's like I've really liked being counted as, you know, a viewer, and my husband as well. It's like for watching The Walking Dead episodes and also Fear, and also just like hearing Brian give his ratings each week, knowing that I was secretly included in those numbers. I think we counted for individual,
so something like 22,000 people or something.
No,
like that.
I think it's 33,000. So like, wow. Between me and my husband, we count for 66,000 people.
You're like a whole zip code.
But I mean, you know, all good things come to an end. So it's kind of going to be nice that I'll be able to watch TV without my husband yelling buttons, buttons every time the button, like the box blinks. You have to like kind of have a remote to keep saying that you're still watching. So it's just, it's coming in. But yeah, I'm like, I've really enjoyed it. I was like very excited when it first started and being like, oh, I'm like, I'm going to. That's why I'm like, always said, it's like, oh no, I got to watch it when it airs. Like, cause I'm, you know, being basically monitored for it.
I think the last time we had it, I still had the bubble form.
Oh yeah.
You know, fill in the bubble completely. Use a number two pencil.
Well, now it's like, it's whatever. It's like, I'm no longer them. Like, so it's like, it's just, they hook everything up to it. So it's like all my streaming, everything. So it's just, as soon as the TV turns on, I'm just like, I log in.
That's cool.
All right. To interact with us, we encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Walking Dead TTM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. And you can find that at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadTTM. Also email us at walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. You can also find our feedback form at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. To leave a voicemail, you can call us at 216-232-6146. And all of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media. And remember to subscribe and click the bell to get notified for when we have new videos. Those videos do go up first before the podcast does. So if you want to get it right whenever I've actually finished editing it and like, you know, doing the processing, you can be notified and go ahead and start listening to it right away. And usually the podcast comes out probably like, it depends, the next day, depending on when I actually finish it, like, you know, at night or in the morning.
And I'd also definitely like to say, go ahead and subscribe to the channel on YouTube. And like those episodes.
Yes. Yeah. It's like anything to like, you know, push us up in more of the search results, or,
cause you know, just like, just like the professional YouTubers say, if you subscribe and you smash that like button, that will get us better in the algorithm. So people will hear about the podcast there. And if YouTube is not their primary podcast format, then at least it'll get them pointed in the right direction so they can hear us.
Yes. Definitely do it. Also, to be able to support us, like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page. And you can find that at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. We do post all the stuff that's going on in our network on the Talk Through Media Facebook page. And then we share it out to, like, you know, the individual groups. But if you want to see everything and find everything that we're doing on the network, that is the best place to go, besides, you know, just going to our webpage as well. And the best way you can support us is in our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. And, you know, I think you can just basically donate a dollar a month, five, whatever you want to do. But, like, that helps us, you know, with everything that we do, you know, posting in our content. And, you know, it's like, if you like what we're doing, we would definitely would really appreciate any support that you can give us. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum and Lawrence Todd, who is over there. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast client of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com, where you can actually rate individual episodes or the whole podcast as a whole. So check that out. And overall, remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them, or tell a friend, because word of mouth is the best way we get new listeners.
Well, where else can you be listened to, Kyle?
Yes. Well, Brian and I just finished a season covering Star Trek Lower Decks, with the Star Trek Discovery just started, which Brian will be covering that with Ruthie. Is that episode out? It's probably out by the time you hear this. Okay. So definitely go check that out. Me and Brian had such a fun time covering Lower Decks, and I kind of, you know, I'm taking over Fear with you, and, you know, it's like, I hopefully will be able to kind of, like, at least put some comments or maybe a voicemail to join up with you guys talking about Discovery. But you can go to Star Trek Discovery Podcast.com, or you can go to the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/group Star Trek TTM Podcasts. They also have a Patreon for those podcasts. You can find that at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And, you know, that's a great way to support the network and support, you know, them doing the podcast.
And Discovery, the Star Trek podcasts, actually have some Patreon-only content.
Yes. All right. Well, then for the next episode of Fear of the Walking Dead, Season 6, Episode 3, is called Alaska, which this made me kind of have a little, I don't know, like a little light bulb above my head, because, like, we just saw Alicia being sent away. But I don't, you know, this episode is not going to be about that, but I'm curious. Alaska, like, real Alaska?
It's a long ride from Oklahoma to Alaska.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So I don't know, it just sparked my interest. It was written by Mallory Westfall, directed by Coleman Domingo. So not only did we get Lenny James, you know, doing his feared directorial debut, then we have Coleman coming back. He's done one, what, last season? He had his episode. And then, of course, Fear the or the Walking Dead World Beyond, Season 1, Episode 4, The Wrong End of the Telescope. There was not a description that I could find, so we'll just leave it at that. So until next time, I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk. Good night, everyone.
Good night.